Some futurists think that water will inspire greed and warfare and could one day be as valuable as oil is today. That's a worst-case scenario, but there's no denying that water is a finite resource, and it's increasingly taxed as our population grows. A 2-year drought in the southeast has hit Atlanta hard. The crisis may have peaked last fall when the city's main supplying reservoir held less than a 3-month reserve. But some experts say Lake Lanier could reach record lows again this summer. So what can public officials and private citizens do? To give us their perspectives, we've got Gil Rogers, staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center, and Daryl Haddock. He's the Environmental Education Director for West Atlanta Watershed Alliance. Thanks for coming on.
Hello.
So, you know, let me start with you, Daryl. What are the water sources that we're talking about for Atlanta residents? Where do folks actually get their water from?
Metro Atlanta receives its water from the Chattahoochee watershed. It's basically the Chattahoochee River. Newt's Heads waters are actually north of the city, basically in the Appalachian Mountains. And it's a little outside of the Metro Atlanta local area, but we have several reservoirs, and we actually pipe the water into the city and distribute it to local residents.
Are there people fighting over this water, the same water? Because, you know, for example, living in Los Angeles, water is incredibly politicized. So is that the same here?
The East has different water rights legally, and Gil could probably speak to that. But basically, the thing that causes communities to fight over water is that they're not managed based on their watersheds. They're actually managed based on their municipal boundaries. And so, unfortunately, what that does is when you see growth and when you see urban sprawl in some cases, you cause a strain on that finite water source.
Gil, what do you think about the politicization or turf wars, I guess, over water?
Well, these wars have been going on here in the southeast now for 18 years. We've been fighting with Alabama and Florida over the Chattahoochee River and some of the other river basins in this area. And again, it's as Daryl said, water doesn't follow political boundaries. It follows natural basins. And when you have a city the size of Atlanta that straddles 5 different river basins – and you have all these political lines in play, then it makes it very difficult to manage the water in a sustainable way.
What are we actually talking about? If you have, for example, getting down to a 3-month reserve sounds pretty tough, but was there, did people buckle down, I guess is what I'm saying. Here in Atlanta, did people buckle down, stop watering their lawns, stop taking showers every day? Or did people go around business as usual saying, you know?
No, at the local level, Atlantans were very proactive, and there was significant water savings and water conservation. I think that's the problem with addressing some of the recent legislation is that, you know, once the residents stepped up and met the need and met the governor's call for close to a 10% reduction, some feel as though they were penalized in that the revenue that hoped to come from business as usual wasn't there. And so now we're looking at infrastructure costs and how can we pay for those.
Gil, what about that? You know, if water is a commodity that people and businesses pay for and then those revenues go down, are these municipalities, including Atlanta, really trapped in terms of making improvements in infrastructure?
Well, one of the big losses of water that we see throughout the southeast and certainly here in Atlanta is water that's lost out of these aging infrastructure systems. You have leaky pipes and aging treatment facilities, and it does require a conscious allocation of money to fix those. And you have utilities that rely on water rate charges coming in to help offset that cost. And so there is an effect that these utilities can feel, but it is a preventable problem if you have state level policies and a willingness from leadership to reallocate funding and restructure pricing so that you can continue to conserve and still fix your infrastructure. It can be a win-win situation, but unfortunately, a lot of the cities just aren't set up that way.
Daryl, when people use the term Hotlanta, they're referring to culture, but it also gets very steamy here in the summer.
Yes.
And if you are in places like Baltimore, my hometown, or, you know, in the Bronx, you see people flipping open the hydrants and all the kids having fun, but that's an incredibly inefficient way to use water. When you talk about urban communities in particular, are there attempts to do some outreach that really speak to folks in urban communities?
Definitely. As you pointed out, in most urban centers, providing water is actually a public health concern. You know, you're actually trying to take care of the fact that water, or the lack thereof, access to water, provides a pathway to all kind of problems. And so, you know, definitely municipalities are going to want to have some access to water. So the governor, kind of in that same vein, is going to allow for public pools to be filled and that kind of thing. But I also think at the, you know, the residents level, we're going to have to think on other ways to address conservation and possibly protection of our water resources. There are a lot of things that we can do in our homes that will affect protecting our creeks and streams and eventually our river.
Gil, Georgia is involved in a lawsuit with Alabama and Florida over water rights, and you're very involved. Tell us about the strife between those states specifically and how Georgia's trying to fix that issue.
Well, it's the fight has arisen over the management of several large reservoirs in Georgia, both Lake Lanier on the Chattahoochee and Lake Allatoona on the Coosa system. And Alabama and Florida are downstream states, and they expect a certain amount of water to come down to sustain their ecology and their businesses and their public health. And Georgia is maintaining that it, because the waters are in its state, that it has a certain right to those waters. And it really comes down to looking at whether each state has its house in order in terms of management. And unfortunately, we have a history of waiting until droughts and crises to really start addressing water. And, you know, the legislature says, uh-oh, you know, we haven't done anything. We need to step up a little bit. And we just can't do that sustainably going forward. And Florida and Alabama both have their own water challenges. I think all three states can improve water management to different degrees. But Georgia certainly has a long way to go.
What about farm versus urban? Because in some parts of the country, that's an issue, too. It's like how much water goes to irrigation, how much water goes to natural resources like wetlands, how much water goes to cities. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a good question. And I should point out, actually, that it's not just Florida and Alabama that are downstream in this case. It's a lot of southern Georgia, cities like Columbus and going all the way down to Bainbridge in South Georgia, and also a lot of farm communities. And agriculture does account for a lot of water use, particularly in South Georgia. And they've had problems in the past with using too much of a finite resource and drawing down aquifers. They are making improvements, but there really isn't a whole lot on the books in terms of kind of mandating a progress towards conservation in the agricultural community. And that is something we're concerned about in addition to the municipal and industrial water use.
Daryl, this has become an international issue. You know, water is turf rights are something that are causing disputes between different nations. Are you optimistic or pessimistic that in Georgia and in the United States we're going to be able to work out our differences without getting into too rough of a situation?
I'm optimistic. It's hard not to kind of wax into that whole science fiction doomsday scenario when you view water as strictly a free market commodity. But fortunately, it's not just a free market commodity. It's a utility. And so there has to be some aspect of public access. And so when you look at it in terms of, you know, despite creating distribution so that costs don't rise, that people will have access to good, clean, quality water if we do a few simple basic things to protect it.
Gil, do you think that water is a human right? There's a lot of debate over whether that's the case.
I do. I view water as a public resource, as something that our government is charged with managing so that we all have enough water to use and that it's affordable and plentiful. And, you know, as I've said, our leadership at this point has fallen short, I think, in a lot of ways in ensuring that we continue to have that right. And I do think that water does have a value that we recognize when we pay our water bills and when industries make use of water to turn into products. But underlying all that, I think, is a more fundamental public right that all of us have to the water. And that's the way we recognize it under the law here in Georgia.
All right. Well, Gil and Daryl, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gil Rogers is a staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center, and Daryl Haddock is Environmental Education Director for West Atlanta Watershed Alliance. They join me live in the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting.